Ladies and gentlemen, Mrs. Bulova is not here. But we were just discussing the fact that we do have a quorum. We just can't take action. Actually, we can even vote on things.
It doesn't matter.
But a unanimous vote of this group of people will be a failed vote. So, what we're going to do is, we're waiting for Mrs. Bulova. We're going to go ahead and start with some items. So I hereby call this Thursday, June 8th, 2017 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. The Spirit, would you take the roll?
Chairman Noe.
Here.
Chair Randall.
Here.
Chairman Bulova. Chair Fassette.
Here.
Mayor Silverberg.
Here.
Councilmember Lovejoy.
Here.
Mayor Meyer.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder.
Here.
Mayor Rochelle.
Here.
Senator Black. Delegate Hugo.
Here.
Delegate Minshew.
Here.
Ms. Hines.
Here.
Mr. Cole.
Here.
Mayor Burke.
Here.
Ms. Cuervo. Mr. Horsley.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right, fantastic. So, we will skip over the minutes of the May 11 meeting, because we can't approve them yet. And we will go to item 4, updating the region's long-range transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My presentation tonight is an overall, how did we get here, which would really be item 5, and that would be the release of the draft transaction plan for public comment and the public hearing. So, as you will know, the authority is legislatively required to prepare a long-range transportation plan, regional transportation plan for Northern Virginia that includes transportation improvement of regional significance. So we currently have 4 long-range transportation plans for the region, the Northern Virginia 2020 transportation plan. I did put an asterisk by that particular plan because it was developed prior to the inception of the authority, so it was developed by the Transportation Coordinating Council. I was going to say we have a few members here who were a part of that council. Then we have the Transaction 2030 plan, the Transaction 2040 plan, and the current plan that's being updated now that we're just calling Transaction. So the Northern Virginia 2020 transportation plan was, again, adopted by the Transportation Coordinating Council in December of 99. The total cost for that plan was $9.7 billion, and these are capital costs only. Then we had Transaction 2030, which was adopted in 2006, with a total cost of $15.4 billion. And our current plan, Transaction 2040, adopted in 2012, total cost $23.2 billion. And again, these are only capital costs. It does not take the operations and maintenance costs into consideration. So after Transaction 2040 was adopted in November 2012, along came HB 2313. HB 2313, as you know, provides regional revenues to Northern Virginia. It was originally estimated to provide about $300 million annually. 70% would be utilized by the authority for regional transportation projects that are in your long-range transportation plan and have undergone the HB 599 evaluation. Also of note, the authority shall give priority to selecting the projects that are expected to provide the greatest congestion reduction relative to the cost of the project. And then again, we have the 30% revenues that go back to the localities, provided that certain aspects of the law are met. To date, I think we're trending at, 327, Mike? About $327 million annually, so we're doing a little better than what was originally estimated. So MBTA HB 2313 revenues received and projected through fiscal year June 30th, which is in a few weeks. Total revenues received, look at the pie chart on the left, we're at about $1.2 billion. And the revenue types are identified, so where the revenues are coming from. Again, the authority's revenues come from 3 particular pots: grantor's tax, the sales tax, and the transient occupancy tax. That little green slice in the middle is the interest. We've received about $6.2 million since the inception of 2313 in interest funds. The pie chart on the right gives the split regarding the 70 and 30% that we've undertaken to date. $370 million have gone to the localities, and about $864.6 million have come back to the authority. So the authority funding program since HB 2313. The authority currently has adopted three funding programs. You have your FY 2014 program, which was adopted in July of 2013. The total investment of that program is $187 million. The FY 14 program does include the authority's inaugural bond issuance, in which you received the AA+ credit rating. Then you have your FY 2015-2016 program, which was adopted in April of 2015. The total investments of that program is almost $337 million. And lastly, you have your FY 17 program, adopted last July, $466 million in investment. Now, I did want to note that $300 million of that $466 was programmed for the I-66 at Route 28 interchange. To date, the authority has taken no action to remove that funding from the project. You agreed that you would wait till the Commonwealth reaches financial close, and at that time, you would deallocate the funds and put it into the regional revenue pot and make it available starting for FY18. Your three current funding programs were all developed under Transaction 2040. So the big picture in this, you have a total of 79 projects, regional revenue funded projects at $990 million total. Now of that 79, we do have 14 projects that I will say closed out. Some are, and that means off the authority's books that we fulfilled our financial commitments to the project. Some of the closed out projects are indeed complete. Others are still utilizing other funding sources. Now, again, when we deallocate the funds from the 66 to 28 interchange, $300 million will come out of that $990 million. And to speak to some of the regional investments that the authority has made under the three funding programs, of course, the 66 to 28 interchange, Route 28 widenings in Fairfax, Loudoun, Prince William, Route 1 widenings, Route 7, Loudoun County and Fairfax County Parkway, Columbia Pike Multimodal Improvements, the Belmont Ridge Road Widening. And this is just a high-level snapshot. Of course, this isn't representative of all 79 projects. You put about $175 million in capital investments. I do need to emphasize capital investments for Metro. That includes the Innovation and Potomac Yard Station, traction power upgrades, the second entrance at Ballston, Envision Route 7 Transit Study, BRE, new bus purchases, which goes to enhance or expanded bus services throughout the region, two bus garage, park and ride facilities, and the newly opened Crystal City Multimodal Center. So moving forward and planning for the next round of investment, tonight we are going to ask the authority to release the draft transaction plan for public comment and review. This is the first update to transactions since HB 2313 was adopted. So when we adopt, or when you adopted Transaction 2040 back in November of 2012, there was a lot of commentary about, well, why are we expending even $1.2 million at the time was the budget the authority approved to do this long-range transportation plan when we didn't have revenues to do implementation of the plan. At the time, the authority made some adjustments to the budget. We adopted transaction. We sent the summary brochure to Richmond, and now we have HB 2313. But I do want to note this is the first update. One of the things I charged my staff and the consultant team with as we undertook initiating the update of transaction is continuous public engagement. We shouldn't just go out when we have a draft plan. We actually held a listening session back in October of 2015, just asking the public what are some of their transportation concerns. We've held a benchmark survey, a tracking survey. We had these pop-up sessions. We were at churches, malls, anywhere the public was. We tried to go to the public instead of the traditional approach of asking the public to come to us. Again, transaction update, it will still have a 2040 horizon. It is fiscally unconstrained. So when you see the total cost tonight, and it's no surprise, I'm sure a lot of you have jumped ahead, the transaction plan with the 358 project, it comes at a total capital cost of $44.1 billion. But it is fiscally unconstrained, long-range 25-year horizon. This plan incorporates HB 599. So when Keith and Dan will speak to you later, we have 15 performance measures in which the evaluation of transaction was conducted. Of the 15 performance measures, 7 are the HB 599 measures that VDOT used on the previous HB 599 evaluations. One thing we wanted to make sure that we did was try to streamline the process. We understood early on it seemed very disjointed. We had the HB 599 score, we had the MBTA performance measure score, and then we had the congestion reduction relative to cost score, and it was confusing. Secondly, it does streamline the overall planning processes. All of the quantitative data that you will consider before you get to developing your six-year program will be embodied in this transaction update. It's also based on multimodal corridors and segments. This is important because transaction isn't about individual projects. It's about corridors and segments. So you won't hear a lot of discussion this evening about how individual projects fare. And lastly, performance-based evaluation. Again, this should be nothing new. Federal Highway Administration, the Commonwealth, everyone is looking at performance-based evaluation and analysis. Where do we go from here if the authority releases the draft plan tonight? Adoption of the transaction plan is scheduled for October of 2017. So to get more specific, at your October 12th meeting, we will be asking the authority to adopt the transaction plan. That very same evening, and more than likely, the very next action item will be to authorize the call for regional transportation projects for your FY 2018 to 2023 six-year program. This will be the authority's first six-year program developed under the HB 2313 process. In the spring of 2018, we will ask the authority to adopt your six-year program. Now, I do want to note that right now we anticipate that you will have about $1.5 billion in cash or PAYGO revenues for your six-year program. It doesn't mean that you should program at all. We're just giving you the fact that you'll probably have $1.5 billion. We also want to synchronize the authority six-year program with the Commonwealth six-year improvement program. This is important because of two main reasons. We want to see projects maximize funding opportunities and leverage additional resources. It goes a long way for a project to know, hey, you have varying funding sources on a particular project. And also, there is a provision in 2313 that, and I'm paraphrasing, that speaks to Northern Virginia still getting its share of state monies, although you have HB 2313. And some of the funding sources, again, regarding the implementation of projects that you will see in transaction, because another thing I want to note, although you develop transaction and it is Northern Virginia's long-range transportation plan, transaction projects or the implementation of transaction isn't solely based off of the MBTA HB 2313 revenue. There are smart scale district grants, high priority programming funds, there are federal dollars, CMAQ, RSTP, 30% funds, etc. So I did want to set the stage on how we got where we are tonight. Are there any questions?
Ms. Beckman, I have one comment and one kind of question. The comment I always think is good to make is that when you talk about the bond rate, the AA+, is to say that that's as high as we can get in this, and the authority can get. So a AA+ with the authority is akin to a county having a AAA bond rating, and I think it's important to actually make that point, because otherwise people might ask.
Absolutely. When we went to New York, it seems like a lifetime ago, but it was only a few short years ago, and presented to the credit rating agencies, one thing that we were informed of once we received our AA+, AA+, and AA1 across the board was, this is really unheard of for an entity like ours, because we don't set the taxes, if you will. That's done by the Commonwealth. But because of the economic climate of the region and the localities, really, we were able to get that rating.
I think that's important to say that. Can you just talk really briefly, what, if any, constraints do you have on the 30% money?
So the 30%, under HB 2313, the 30% funds can be used for new infrastructure, urban and secondary road improvements, projects that are in transaction or the subsequent updates, and public transportation purposes.
For all capital.
No, you can use for operations as well. You can use the 30% for operations. You cannot use the 70% for operations.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So I would like to turn it over to Keith Jasper, who's the project manager from the MBTA side regarding the transaction plan, and Dan Malik, who chairs the transaction subcommittee. And I would like to thank both of these gentlemen right now, because this is, you know, when I said we did a listening session back in 2014, I had forgotten that we actually started in 2014. And here we are now asking the authority to release the draft plan. There's been a lot of long hours and hard work put into this, not only by my staff, but your staff as well.
All right, Chairman, thank you, members of the authority. I would also like to just mention many members of the subcommittee, which Dan chairs, and Bob Brown from Loudoun County is the vice chair for, are behind me. And I hope I don't get any kind of burning sensations in my back, but I would like to commend them for several years of continuous effort they've put into this. And also, to my right is Dahlia Levin from AECOM. She is here tonight so that to avoid these situations where Dan and I would embarrass ourselves by answering technical questions. She is here to fill those. Let me begin. From my perspective, this is a very, very important milestone tonight that we're reaching. You have in your packets a 12-page transaction plan draft for public comment. And I believe you have a link in your packet tonight to a rather large document, which is the project list that is associated with the draft plan. And the intent of the action item that's in front of you this evening is to approve the release of these two documents for the public comment period, which, subject to your approval, will start public comment tomorrow through July 23rd. And I'll come back to that in just a moment. I would also point out at the bottom right-hand corner, there's a little blue box in front of this document which provides the electronic link to the larger project, this document. So let me start by saying that project list includes over 350 projects, candidate regional projects, that have been identified over the last couple of years and analysed over the last several months. To address the authorities' priorities in terms of transportation for the region. I would say at the outset that transaction is not bound by any budget, and it proposes more projects than can be realistically funded within the authorities' resources. But the point is, it's a plan. We're looking to try and improve things in Northern Virginia. But the time for prioritizing which projects the authority will invest in will follow the adoption of transaction as we move through the development and subsequent adoption of your first six-year program. A couple of technical points I've mentioned previously, but bear restating. By 2040, population in Northern Virginia is forecast to increase by 24% compared to now, and employment is forecast to increase by 37% compared to now. And that sets the backlog for our planning horizon year of 2040. And obviously, addressing that growth is very important for projects such as those that are included in transaction to ensure a good quality of life for Northern Virginians, which was identified as transportation was identified as one of the biggest factors, actually the biggest factor that affects quality of life for Northern Virginians. If you turn to page 2 of the 12-page draft plan, see a three-column diagram headed planning, program, and funding. I'm not going to dwell on this too long, you'd be pleased to hear, but it does set the context for transaction and the six-year program. So you see transaction is called out in a slightly lighter color box under the planning column. And as you know, as Monica has mentioned previously, this is something that is updated every 5 years or so. The output from transaction feeds into the project selection process, for the development of the six-year program, along with a number of other things, if it's not anything that feeds into that process. And ultimately, the six-year program is where the funding projects will appear, and that's will be updated every 2 years as we move forward. So these are the key products. We don't really have an end point to this graphic because it's a continuous process that cycles through. As money comes in, we allocate more money moving forward. Turning to page three, and Monica's already stolen most of my thunder on this page, so I will just summarise by saying that we have adopted an extremely robust process in putting this plan together. It uses 15 performance measures that were approved by the authority in December and weightings which were approved, I think, in February of this year. And essentially what we've done is we've gone from the vision, which was set at the outset, through goals, objectives, to the performance measures and the associated weights, to come up with the evaluations that were done within the transaction plan. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Dan to talk you through those evaluations and what we found from that process.
Sure. So it's a pleasure to be here this evening. Let's move ahead to page four. Page four describes the current conditions as of 2016. This formed the base for our plan. The map you see shows conditions in 2016 according to the performance measures that Keith just described from page three, the table at the bottom of the page. And you can see on that map there are problem areas where you would expect. The darker the color, the more the problem. So you can see that I-66 and the Beltway and I-95 are highlighted as problem areas. That forms the base for where we are now. The circle at the bottom is a very important graph that communicates how travel works in Northern Virginia.
It does. That's exactly how travel works.
Or perhaps doesn't.
It's confusing and colorful.
unless, like, we have a black and white version. No, it's fine.
Yeah, it's sad. In which case, it still works because it's kind of sad.
The point, of course, being that there's a lot of different trips going in a lot of different directions. We can't just solve one problem and have solved everything.
So the user course needs a few of us aren't on here. Does that really, is that a really bad sign?
Oh my God. We're the little asterisk.
Okay. We're the asterisk? Okay.
Yeah. We do apologize for that.
Worse.
In terms of readability, that we made that decision.
David, you get two asterisks. That's one.
See?
You
should feel twice as much.
So moving on to the next page. The next page describes the projects that are in the plan at a very high level. We don't list all the projects. That's in that separate document that Keith described. What you see here is first the corridors and the segments. And the top, that map on the top. We use this corridor approach. We've always used it in transaction, at least the last two. I'm not sure if you go back to the very first one. And the point of the corridors is that travel in Northern Virginia is not based on jurisdiction. People don't care when they cross a jurisdictional line. What matters is the corridors, the directionality, things like that. So we've always used corridors as the base geography rather than jurisdictional boundaries. This round for transaction for this plan, we introduced one more finely grained aspect. We introduced corridor segments. And the purpose of that is that a lot of the corridors are very different depending on where you go. Route 7 being a very good example. It's an incredibly different road and corridor in, say, Loudoun County versus the city of Alexandria. So we've taken 11 corridors in Northern Virginia, and we've broken each one of the corridors into two or three segments based on the characteristics within the corridor at that point. And then we've slotted the projects, the 358 projects, into those corridor segments and moved from there. As Keith described, there are 358 total projects in the plan. Those include both projects that are bottom-up from the jurisdictions and projects that are top-down from the NDPA and the subcommittee. There were, I don't know, perhaps maybe 600 or 700 projects at one point. A lot of them didn't satisfy various objectives or goals from the previous page, and so didn't make it through the process. The 358 is what we're left with. And the $44 billion is the total cost. I'll make a couple of quick notes about the total cost. About half of it is taken up by a small number, a dozen, 15 very large mega projects. Things like a Metro Rail Bridge under the Potomac or a highway bridge between Dulles and Montgomery County. And 10 to 13 billion of it is contained in projects that are at least partially outside of Virginia. Transaction, again, is not a funding plan. It's a visionary plan. It's much less constrained than NVTA's budgeting process is. So we're free to do things like include projects that we think are important outside of the NVTA geography. There are, you can see the Venn diagram shows you the breakdown by mode. I'm not going to go through it in terms of time, but you can see there's quite a diverse set of projects. Moving on to page 6 and 7, this is a two-page spread and really shows you the benefits of the plan. The map on the far left is what happens in 2040 if we don't do transactions. We only build the things that are currently funded, already on the books, maybe under construction, maybe not quite yet. Things like the I-66, hot lanes. That's already funded, so that's pre-transaction. You can see that in 2040, things get very bad. If you compare back to the map on page 4, it's quite a bit worse. The second map in the middle there is the draft plan. It's transaction with these 358 projects. You can see that compared to the map on the left, things are quite a bit better. Still a lot of problem areas. Certainly everything is not solved forever. Certainly I-95 and the Beltway still have problems, but it's quite a bit better. The map on the right simply shows you the difference between the two. It allows you to see at a little bit more highlighted level where there are differences. And you can see, again, places like I-66, there's quite a lot of improvement there. Route 7, Route 495, quite a lot of improvement there. One note here, there are a few places where you can see things get worse, the red or orange on the map. Not too many, but a few, and I'll just describe why that happened in most cases. Either there were places where there wasn't a road in the base scenario, and so there was no congestion. There's nothing happening there. And now we've added a facility, and sometimes it's congested. So it looks worse on the map. Another thing that sometimes happens is that a new facility that we've added in the plan induces some traffic somewhere else nearby that isn't quite taken care of by what's in the plan. So you do see that a little bit around the region. But certainly for the most part, there's much more good news than bad news with this plan. Moving on to page 8. This describes the benefits in a little bit more detail. The very good news is that the plan on average saves the average Northern Virginian 27 minutes per day of travel time. That's quite significant. The table in the upper left gives you a little bit of breakdown in terms of statistics if you're the sort of transportation nerd like I am that you really want to know about transit ridership and person miles traveled. I'll just highlight a couple of things. Person hours of delay goes down 44%. Person hours of travel goes down 24%. Person miles of travel goes down 0.4%, which is small, but is an important finding because it tells us we're gaining a lot of efficiency in the system with this. Meanwhile, on transit boardings are up 14%, so we're getting a lot more transit ridership, while transit crowding goes down 64%, which essentially means we're getting better service but less congestion on the transit system. And this is all despite the major increases in population and jobs that Keith described earlier.
This question. The draft plan will save the average Northern Virginia more than 27 minutes a day. Take that at face value. What I want to share, just so I understand what that is, I have a feeling, and I'm not saying we should change the language, but I have a feeling that it saves the average Northern Virginia commuter 27 minutes every workday. I want to tell you, my 12-year-old son is going to save zero time because of this.
So change the verbiage.
I'm not saying change the verbiage. I think it is intuitive that that's what it means. If it's correct, I don't think we need to change it. If, in fact, it saves the average Northern Virginian, including the children, and including the work-from-home crowd, then let's bump the number up and then let's change the verbiage. I think people assume it means the average commuter on a work day.
The question is whether this was divided by the total population or the total number of commuters. I don't know the answer to that.
And if it's divided by the total number of days or the total number of federal work days.
So all the modeling is done just for an average day. So it's not an annual number. So it's not federal work days or anything. And it is looking at the total amount of time that people, children included, spend traveling, divided by the total number of people who live in Northern Virginia, children included.
Okay.
So your child will say 26.
By implication, you know, not that the numbers actually work like this. Not that average. I am the only commuter in a family of six. So in theory, I might save an hour and a half an hour.
Yes.
That's actually okay.
That's an interesting question because I would have assumed what you would assume.
Yeah. So that said, again, I'm still not saying change it because now we know it's factually correct. But I'd be curious to know what it saves the average commuter if that's easy to capture.
It actually is every Virginian based on what she said, not the average Virginian. Right?
Well, no, it is an average because it absolutely cannot save time for people who don't leave their house. Take the total number of hours saved. And to be fair, it does include that my wife's a stay home mom, but sometimes she has to drive to the other end of Prince William County to transact business, and she will save some time in that.
Marty, what she means is it should say the draft plan will save each Northern Virginian an average of 27 minutes.
We're not average Northern Virginians. This is like
here, so. Yeah, that's actually more great. Yeah. I feel like I'm quibbling, and I don't mean to quibble. I mostly just want to understand it. But now that we've had this discussion, let's go back and look at this phrase.
Yeah,
we can.
But what Jay said, we can.
Yeah, Jay's statement is every Virginian will save an average of 27
right.
minutes,
yeah.
Which means that some people will save zero and some people will save six
yeah.
hours.
Yeah.
Although, like at some extreme, there's presumably someone who, based on this plan, who currently commutes 3 hours a day, who will, because of this plan, be able to telecommute, and they will save 100% of their time. So. Anyway, it's quibbling.
That's a good point.
Thank you, that's a good point. I mean, this is obviously it's a finding that we're highlighting when we get it right. So we will go ahead and make sure that we do that. Let's move on a little bit. So we've talked about the table, we've talked about the 27 minutes, we've talked about population and employment. I'll just highlight on this page the map in the lower left that shows job accessibility. And we're showing this particular map rather than maps for every individual measure just because it's very different than the others and it tells a story that in some ways sort of sums things up. Right? I mean, accessibility means ability to get somewhere, and this map shows that for a very broad section of Northern Virginia, people have improved ability to get somewhere. So we'll move on to the next page, page 9. This describes some stress test scenarios that we performed. The purpose of these was really to test our base assumptions and make sure that the plan could survive some changes to those base assumptions. So every plan that we do, that anyone does, uses base assumptions about land use and technology, right? How much will we grow? Where will that growth happen? Will magical things fall from the sky like autonomous cars, or will we continue to do business more or less as we do it now? The draft plan assumes certain answers to those questions. But if we changed the answers to those questions, what would happen? Would the plan still work, or would it fall apart? And that was the purpose of these four stress tests. There were four of them. I'll very briefly describe each one. The first one, A, used technology such as autonomous cars to improve long-distance travel. The second one, B, modified travel behavior so that fewer and shorter trips were more abundant and larger, the travel in the region was built around fewer, shorter trips. Scenario D, modified the land use within each jurisdiction to make it more dispersed. And scenario D, modified the land use within each jurisdiction to make it more concentrated. And the most important finding that we had here was that in none of these scenarios does travel in Northern Virginia completely blow up. The plan survives them all, which is really what we wanted to know. We also found a number of other interesting things that if you're a transportation nerd like me, you will want to dig into, but not everyone will want to dig into them. So I'm going to just very quickly say at the very bottom of the page, you see these two sort of bar charts. They tell you how each of these scenarios performed on person hours of delay and transit crowding relative to the diamond, which is the draft plan, the standard forecast. You can see some of them are a little bit better. Some of them are not quite as good. A, which is the autonomous cars scenario, is an outlier here. And the reason it's an outlier is a lot of the benefits that you get from autonomous cars happen with or without some of these projects. So that's an interesting finding that may be something we'll want to look at more in the future. But for the purposes of transaction, that's what we did here. We'll move on. Page 10 describes the analysis that was done for each of these corridor segments and the results of those. You recall the corridor segments from back on page 5, the map with the 11 corridors and 2 or 3 segments for each one. This is where that comes into play. We put each of those corridor segments and all the projects in them through the scoring methodology that you saw on page 3, the big complicated table at the bottom of page 3. This was the results. You can see the highest rated corridor segments are at the top of the list. The lower rated ones are at the bottom of the list. Generally speaking, the corridor segments that floated to the top were the ones where there were a lot of trips happening, a lot of people moving, and where we had a lot of projects making it better for them. The corridor segments that generally floated to the bottom were the ones where there were fewer trips happening, fewer people moving, and fewer projects. But it's very important to note that this is the first round of analysis. This is the round of analysis that we do for transaction. Later stages of NDTA's process, we'll delve deeper and talk about that. I'll turn it back over.
This chart, really important piece of this chart. We're all doing the thing that we all do when charts come out. We're looking at the project we care about. And this is tough because this isn't project. This is quarter segments. What quarter segment is the project we care about? That said, this is strictly performance ratings. There is no cost analysis.
Correct.
So the project with a really high performance rating and the unbelievably high price tag might become a really bad deal. It's when we get to that future phase, which we're not dealing with.
Yes.
Correct. That's correct. Can I ask a question about the chart on 10?
Yes.
I'm seeing on here, and question. So these are potential projects we may be looking at or thinking about? Or?
No, these are not projects. These are segments of corridors where improvements could happen.
Right. Each one of these lines on this table has a lot of projects in it. The projects are listed in a separate document. Is just too long.
Well, some of them don't have. Some of these segments have only one project.
Was there any consideration to having that top line read corridor segment description, so that when the public looks at this, they don't think that each one of these are an individual project?
Well, in addition to asking to release this draft, we had the project list itself. So that if people want to see the 358 projects in the 11 corridors and the 28 segments, we have the listing.
And thank you for breaking out the extraterritorial projects out of that $44 billion. I think that was productive.
Yeah, I guess my question, I'm looking on here, just some of these, and I appreciate all the work y'all put in it. I'm looking almost to the bottom. The one that says Bi-County Parkway.
Doesn't exist.
Is that the one? Exactly. But that's the one. Are they thinking about that? Because that's one I think Prince William County took off their list, comprehensive plan. CTB is said it's not going to be built, and the secretary is said it's not going to be built. I see it here on the list. So I'm just curious, are we expending effort to examine this? One that's been taken off the list by a number of, statewide entities?
So we do, there is legislation, I believe it's HB 1912 or 1915, that says that the authority's long-range transportation plan isn't really constrained to a locality's comprehensive plan, because we're trying to look at projects that will help improve the transportation network. Now, having said that, there is a reality that comes into play with that. One of the realities is, we have projects, that we're calling extraterritorial, being projects that are not only in Northern Virginia, but they also have segments in D.C. and Maryland. They're included in here as well, but these projects will not advance because at the end of the day, D.C. and Maryland has to give the thumbs up and the go-ahead to advance these projects and show that they have the funding commitment. For the Bi-County Parkway, when we get to the 6-year program phase, I guess the call for projects, we will issue the call for projects. At that time, we will solicit from the localities and agencies, ask them to submit the projects per this quantitative analysis and some qualitative factors, which projects they think would give the region the greatest level of congestion reduction, if you will, and meet the rest of the performance measures. So that's a long way of saying the authority doesn't implement. We do not implement. We do depend on the localities, the agencies, the Commonwealth, or whomever. However, the fiscally unconstrained long-range plan being transaction is not beholden to any comprehensive plan.
Mr. Chair, last question, I promise. So if tonight when we vote on this, so will we be putting the Bi-County Parkway out on a list for public comment?
I'll just add, though, for that corridor segment 2-2, there are a total of 27 projects included in that segment.
So I think something that's a little...
The answer is yes, sir.
Yeah, just let me say something that's a little confusing on this. I don't think it's relevant at this point. The segment of the North-South Corridor, there's a corridor of statewide significance called the North-South Corridor that includes lots of things. It includes roads that are in Dumfries, it includes roads that are in Leesburg. Right? One of the subsegments of that corridor is a segment that we're labeling here the Bi-County Parkway. The road, the Bi-County Parkway, is one of 22 projects that can be built in that corridor. So these numbers, and the same would apply to everyone. So yes, the road that we often call the Bi-County Parkway is one of the 500 projects that have been evaluated. But 21 other projects in that same corridor are captured in, so I would guess, for example, like the Battlefield Bypass would be another project that isn't the Bi-County Parkway, but is part of the subsegment 2.2 that has been labeled the Bi-County Parkway.
Thank you.
Yes. But that having been said, so the public looking at that would assume that when they saw Bi-County Parkway that it was the road that it's that is within the corridor that they're commenting on or can and probably will comment on. I guess maybe there could be a bit of an explanation.
Isn't there a different name?
So, the corridor segment descriptions that you see on this table are, as you know, the different labels.
You could change the name of this corridor segment very easily. Now, that wouldn't change the projects that are in the corridor segment, but we could change the name so that it wouldn't change.
What would you change it to? What's it?
I'm trying to think. The last time at a Bi-County Parkway meeting, about 1,000 people showed up.
Thinking that this was a hearing on the Bi-County Parkway, which is really.
So let me make an observation. I have no problem changing the name of the segment if the goal of changing the name of the segment is to distinguish the specific possible future road from the segment. It's a little tricky because when I look at I-395/US1/VRE Fredericksburg/Blue-Yellow Line, it's very clear that's multiple facilities. And actually, there's probably 50 projects in that segment, right? But I have no problem if we want to change the name of the segment to distinguish it from the project. What I don't want to do, look, and I, Tim, I'll be clear. You know, I recognize, there are in certain circles that project is very unpopular. But it's also that project is also part of a corridor of statewide significance, which is on Loudoun County's comp plan. I don't think we can ignore that the possible project exists. And what I wouldn't want to do is change the name of the segment if the outcome of I don't want to find ourselves in a position where someone says, you changed the name of the segment to hide from us that one project is one of the five. I know you're not looking for that.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about, changing the name. I don't want it to look like we're trying to hide the fact that this one project, which is unpopular in some circles, is in here. Because there's lots of the 500 and change projects, there's lots of unpopular projects in here. This happens to be the only, as far as I can tell, this is the only project that is unpopular in some circles which happens to have the same name as its segment. Is that clear?
I would suggest keeping Bi-County Parkway in the name, but adding /North-South Corridor so that it implies that it's not just the Bi-County Parkway.
Sure. Sure. I mean, yes. I mean, yeah. I'm a little ambivalent on it.
There is there's a list of roads in Virginia that are corridors of statewide significance, and they have names. That's assigned, I guess, by the CPB. So would not it be wise to use whatever the name is that the CPB uses for these statewide corridors of statewide significance? I mean, if we change the nomenclature, that might be confusing to the consumer.
So I'm looking to Ms. Sinner, who, as soon as I looked at her, started doing doubtful hand gestures.
Mr. Chairman, the corridor of statewide significance for North-South is much larger than the segment that is identified on your transaction. It goes from 95 all the way to Route 50, if the same nomenclature is to be used.
So in other places, okay, so I'm going to look at segment 2.3, which is labeled Route 234, 66 to 95. That's a road that runs in the middle of my district. Everyone, and so Route 234 is a part of the North-South corridor, but it's very clear, you know, but again, this segment has lots of projects in it that aren't Route 234. It's got something like Purcell Road or something.
The corridor is a mile wide. The study that determined the corridor of statewide significance is about a mile wide.
How many segments of corridor number two are there? I see three on there. I see Loudoun County Parkway / Belmont Ridge Road. And
yeah, if you refer to the map on page 5, you can see there are three, 2.1, 2.2, 2.3.
I'm not asking for any changes. I just need clarification what was in there. So I didn't mean to slow up the trains here. I was just trying to figure it out.
Well, I mean, frankly, I appreciate you bringing it up because, you know, this is one of the, you know, we have 500 projects in here. There are a handful of them, probably a solid two-digit number of them, that somewhere someone unliked. And I don't think we want to hide the fact they're in there. I don't think we want to attract attention to them in such a manner that makes it look like they're going to get built tomorrow just because they're in this plan either, right? So what can I suggest? Or you were going to say something.
I was just going to ask Mr. Hugo, because I thought your question was really valid, which is that what the public, when it goes out for public comment, is that what they will see? Because if that's what the public will see when it goes up for public comment, that could cause some significant confusion.
But if it's accurate, I'm okay with letting them see it. Let's put the cards on the table. I'm okay with that. So
but
I'm not asking for any changes. I just want to clarify.
But they may not realize that the corridor that has many projects on the corridor. They may believe that it's just what we've talked about in the past. And that is confusing.
You don't have to prolong the fascinating discussion, but if there is a road that is a corridor of statewide significance, isn't there a law that says the locality has to have it on its comprehensive plan, which is relevant to allowing to do this comprehensive plan right now?
So I'll answer that. So I'll use this as an example. What the law says, and some attorney can cut me off, what it says is that either it needs to be in the plan or it has to be acknowledged by the locality that the road exists. This current state of Bi-County Parkway in Prince William County, specifically, using this as the relevant example. We took the alignment of the road, the map that shows an alignment, and Rick will cut me off if I'm wrong on this. We took the alignment off the map, but we added into the plan language that identifies there is a road that would connect I-66 to Route 50 called the Bi-County Parkway, which is in the state plan, which doesn't have an alignment. And we're now, as part of our comp plan update, considering new possible alignments of the road. But the comp plan still acknowledges the road. It just doesn't show the road on the map. It's actually, but that's really hard to explain to people. So we just talk about it as taking it off the plan.
Who's
the
label?
Anyway, okay.
Sure. Are you looking for other comments on this? On this
yeah, sure.
document? I mean, we're getting ready to approve.
Yeah, that's why this is what we're here to do.
Still has
yeah.
two pages.
Oh, you're not done?
It's okay. So, questions on this page? Or
no, I'll just wait.
Let's let Monica finish up, and then we'll give you some robust discussion. We're not Monica. So.
Okay, I'll take it from here very quickly then. So, as you all know, subject to authority approval tonight, we'll start public comment immediately, subject to any changes we have to make as a result of this meeting, looking to adopt transaction and then move into the six-year program, which is where
you know, we'll begin to learn more about which projects are going to be implemented. But at various milestones along that path, what we've identified from the findings that Dan mentioned previously on both pages 9 and 10, we've identified some actions we think the authority should be taking, both in terms of how we integrate transaction into the development of a six-year program, and from there afterwards, including beyond when we actually implement projects, to monitor some of these emerging trends that we talked about earlier, so that we can better understand, report back to the authority anything we find that might undermine the basis for investment decisions that have been previously made, or might affect the basis for future decisions if we see emerging trends that seem to call into question some of the investments. But obviously at this stage we're not able to make any such recommendation other than to monitor the trends. So turning to the final page of the document, this is where we're asking, giving people the specifics of how to engage in this process. So in the larger blue box, you see the details of our public hearing, and that follows a format we've used previously for our funding programs. In the smaller blue box, we mentioned town halls. Quite a number of these have already been scheduled, more of them in the process of being finalised, and all that information about the town halls will be included on the website. We don't include it in this 12-page document. I would also add that there are a couple of pop-up events that we're going to participate in, starting, in fact, tomorrow and over this weekend. We are pleased to be able to accept an invitation to participate in at Celebrate Fairfax with the regional transportation groups that are represented there. So we'll be there for the weekends talking to people about transaction. And we've also committed to participate in an event at the Northern Virginia Chamber on June 27th, where they're actually having a meeting which is specifically looking at the regional economy and transportation, and it seems like a great opportunity for us to talk to business leaders about transportation and specifically encourage them to participate in the transaction process. We've identified under the heading "How can you help?" some specific questions we'd like to hear from people about. We provided links throughout this document, including a link to the project list, which I mentioned earlier. And if I may, Haroon Rashid beside me is one of our staff here, and on the boards behind you and down the room, you see a map of the region. So in addition to the 200-page hard copy, if you want to print that one out, we've actually tried to make this a little bit easier by creating a map with 358 dots on it, where you can go and find out information about the same information that's on this handout, also included on this map. So Haroon is going to give you a very, very brief demonstration of what we have here, so you've got a feel for it, and then we'll be ready to take any further questions.
Thank you, Keith. So the very essence of this map is to provide the user the ability to click on a point and get the project information that are presented in that list of 358 projects that Dan and Keith mentioned. So each point, or sometimes a group of points, show a project that are in the draft plan. Like I said, the basic function is to click on a dot and get project information, or the users are also able to search the whole database by transaction project ID that are on your list. So I'll just pick up a number here, 79 project number. So if you type it in and click on execute, it will take you to the project location. And if you click on that record, it will zoom into that project, which is a West End Transitway project. And right now we are showing the project name and project description, but as we make progress in the draft plan process, we will provide other information as well.
Can I ask a question? This is great. Can you go back to the big map?
Sure. Back to the home view?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's 500 projects. There's not 500 dots.
358 projects.
Of magnification. Like if I zoom, I saw the other map that when you clicked on West End Transitway, I saw two other dots
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that's my point. Is that when you zoom in, you're gonna get more clarity.
Yes. What happens if you click on one of the dots that's across the river?
So those are the extraterritorial projects that Dan and Kit was mentioning too, just because we are not a constraint plan. So we are showing those extraterritorial projects as well. Let me click on one of those. So the North Potomac River crossing is shown as this point. And when you click on it, you will see the project title and the project description for clarification.
Does it say anything about it being extraterritorial?
That is not part of the activity information right now.
I'm just concerned that if those don't sort of have something that says, hey, we need to cooperate with other people to make this thing happen, people get the wrong idea.
That information can be added to it very easily.
They need to cooperate with us.
What?
They need to cooperate with us. We tried.
You got to figure out how to make them cars. And then you got to find the money, fellas.
So, I'm picking up another number. And going to a project which is a heavy improvement project, Fairfax County Parkway in Fairfax County. As before, if you click on the project, it will zoom into that point location. And you will also see a line that shows the project extent, which roadway particularly refers to.
And if I could also add, in addition to the 358 projects that are being considered as part of the transaction plan update, we've also mapped the 79 projects that are approved as part of your FY14, 15, 16, and 17 funding program. If you go to the map link, you can select a link, if you will, that says all regional revenue funded projects. So we can show all 79, or there's a link where you can go in and select projects in individual funding years.
Which is this tool that Monica just described. You are able to choose layers. So the layer that Monica alluded to is the all regional fund projects, which is shown in red. And you are also able to show all these funded projects by each of the program years. Transaction, right. So I'll take it off. The transactions are off now, and all three program year projects are shown. And when you click on them, as before, there will be a set of attributes. Now it's much more detailed than the draft plan because it's all funded. And we have a project cost, total NVDA funds, and some other project details. Like if you click on this link, it will take you to the project webpage, or some of the projects that we have programmed have project descriptions from our webpage as well. So let me show you one of those projects that have both project website information. The Route 1 widening project in Prince Williams County have both our project descriptions and a specific project website. So we are hopeful that this will be informative, at the same time interactive, so that you can click and also search the whole project database. And we will serve this map out from our website, from transaction website, to get and to seek public inputs as well.
So is Doug Fall here tonight? Doug Fall is the vice chairman of our technical advisory committee. Back in 2014, he kept talking at every meeting about, we need a big map. And I know he was talking about a big paper, but so we need a big map of all the projects. So I'm like, Doug, the map is just not the top priority right now. And like we need to get with him, Joe. Like, see, we got your big map.
And Mr. Chairman, this was a part of the FY 2018 budget, the technology plan. And we did ask if we could advance this because we knew we were undergoing the transaction update process.
Mr. Chairman, I love these big maps. I really do. And but it does raise for me just this other issue that won't surprise people who've heard me talk before. A lot of our projects get categorized by whatever the big get is in the project. You know, it's a big roadway project, or we're buying rail cars or something like that. But in most of our projects, we're actually addressing more modes than whatever the big gap is. And I asked VDOT to take a look at this for the Smart Scale projects. And so they've developed for me a map of the region that shows the Smart Scale projects where they've been able to capture how many modes are being addressed by the project. So you can look by the color and you can see there's a bunch that are roads and they're also trails. And so the public begins to get a more integrated understanding of what we're actually funding, and then it's about moving people in multiple ways. And I think we need to attend to that here too, because the impression people get is mostly that we're spending on roads and transit, and we're not sort of looking at that very ground plane stuff. And I think we really are. So I guess I would, you know, whether we do it in the things we're going to pay attention to on page 11 as we develop the six-year plan, we put something in that says, you know, we're going to make sure that we capture all the modes that are addressed by every project so we can monitor that moving forward, or whether we find another way. I think it's a really important message to the region that we're not thinking only about the car, that we're thinking about all of it, and that every project thinks about all of it and makes appropriate choices, you know, where it fits. So just, I think we have that
information. We have that information. So all we will do is add that layer.
Oh, good.
That will show the project by nodes.
Excellent.
So it's just turning on and off layers.
Yeah.
And the way you want to display.
Good. That would be terrific. Well, I was thinking in that use transactions to develop the six-year program that we could have some kind of a bullet there that might say something like, assure that each project fully captures infrastructure improvements for all applicable modes or something like that, just as a way to remind ourselves that we want to keep track of that and promise to the public that we will.
I just want to say this is fantastic. This is really, really
So will authority members have a chance to review and provide input into this detailed version of the plan after the summer? Is the process
I guess there is no restriction to an authority member providing comment, if you will, as part of the public comment period. But
well, after the public comment period, but I don't know, isn't it like July 23rd or something?
Yes, the public comment period is scheduled to end on midnight on July 23rd.
So August, September, or whenever our next meeting is.
So at that time, after midnight on July 23rd, staff will work to combine the comments, provide responses, if you will, so that when we come to the authority, you don't meet in August, but at your September meeting, we would have the dialogue with the authority regarding the public input we received on the draft plan.
That's great. So before final consideration, final adoption, that we would have some time.
Yes.
That's fine. Yes. Okay, thanks. I didn't mean it.
Does it go to the committee?
It goes to the Planning and Programming Committee.
So people who really want to sort of dig in should come to PPC.
Absolutely. And we're actually going to take it to all of the committees. The Technical Advisory Committee, we're going to share with them the comments, the Planning Coordination Advisory Committee, and the Planning and Programming Committee.
Thank you.
Not a question, but just a compliment. So I guess it was it more than a week ago that our committee had a look at this.
Had a lot of feedback.
There was a lot of feedback, and so I just would like to say congratulations on, you know, doing a really good job of capturing the discussion we had and then making some changes, making very good changes in a very compressed time frame.
Well, thank you, Chairman Bova, and I really have to give the nods to the jurisdiction and agency staff and my staff. They really, after we heard your comments loud and clear at the PPC meeting, and everyone worked overtime really to make it happen, including AECOM as well, in doing the quick turnaround so that we could have this comprehensive document tonight.
Jenny.
Sure. And referencing back to the program and planning committee, I also think this is improved, and it really does capture some of the conversation that we had. I think the last couple pages, the last three in particular, are substantially changed in a positive way to be, I think, a lot more useful and readable. I would say overall that I still find, and this is going to work for what we needed to do, and it's going out tomorrow, right? I do consider it a very dense document. The average person is going to have a really hard time slogging through this. So what it really lacked, I think, what's it to be used for? You always start out, who's the audience? What's it to be used for? It's a very dense. The average person isn't going to get into this. It's going to steer more away than it pulls in. That said, it's accurate. I do think that design-wise, there could have been a lot of improvements to make it more accessible to the average person. But it is what it is now, and it's accurate. It's, got a lot of stuff in it. There's one thing I would say, though, that knowing that it's going out tomorrow and we're kind of at the last point, when I looked at this, I'm channeling Helen Cuervo from our meeting on last week. When I go to the, I'm going to point you to the middle pages, the big three. These are big pictures that kind of just send a message, right? If you go back and forth between this middle page and then the very first page, one thing that was added on the first page is that transaction is not bound to any budget and proposes more projects than can realistically be funded. And I think she was really wise to continue to reinforce that, because what you have here are three maps that show the last one, everything becomes a park. it's all a park in the end, and it's all done.
In front it's all made of lava.
Though we have only about $7 billion, this is what happens with $44 billion. So it's about 1/6. We have about 1/6 of the funding that shows up here, at least through the NDTA. So because it's an unconstrained plan, and it just strikes me that the impression and the image is not reality. Hence, between slides 2 and 3 here, the first one is reality, right? That's the condition. The second two are what happens with all the money we don't have, right? So if there is, again, I would argue, a reinforcement of at least bringing down to real life a little bit what actually is here isn't what the MBTA is going to do. You don't want to set expectations for creating parks. I'm a little being joking now about the color. I don't know what else you can do about that. But I do think something in a little bubble here that actually helps reinforce the fact that this is... I'll give you a little language. We can't fund everything in the draft plan. The cost of the 358 projects included far exceed the available funding, MBTA funding. You can play with the language, you can make it more precise, but honestly, I think you need something to put a smattering of reality on the visual graphic impression that is left. And just the words on the first page, which are very helpful as a preface to the whole thing, are really far away from the graphic. So that would be my one sort of change that I hope we might be able to ask staff to implement it before it goes out tomorrow. The only other question I had, and if you don't mind, when this is shared, when you go through the public hearing, are there any other documents or kind of what other supplemental materials would there be to go along with this, or is this it?
There is the associated project list, which is very large, so our inclination is, as mentioned in here on both the front and the last pages, is to provide a link to the project list.
Right.
But we're also going to make obviously hard copy available here for anyone who wants to see it, and we can do the same thing. We're planning to do that through the public library system in Northern Virginia as best we can cover, and through you know, member jurisdictions, we could put that information out there because they're very large documents.
Of course. And I mean, the question really gets down to when you have a public hearing physically. You're in a room doing it. When you're doing links in here, there's a lot of other material you're linking to.
So we'll do a PowerPoint that's a summary of.
So you'll have a PowerPoint. You may have copies of PowerPoint.
Yes.
You'll have this.
We'll have this and the project.
And then you may have the project list that you're not going to copy a million of them, but you're going to have it there.
We will have a few copies on hand. We'll have some boards regarding the corridors, the 11 corridors, trying to show.
So you might have a few of these graphics that are blown up.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Fassett makes a very, very good point. If the first graph on page 6 of what happens, how would we look if we do nothing? And the second graph is how would we look if we do everything, knowing we can't do everything? I don't know that that is proof in advertising, as it were, and we need to have some type of verbiage that says such.
I think we can make that change. We can add a bubble in some of the white space on the right side of the spring.
Page 7 that
uses Mr. Fassett's language or something.
You can do it you can do it in the third one to the right, or it actually applies to the second.
It actually applies to the second. To be fair, the third slide, the third picture does not describe what conditions will become. It shows the density of change. First one is the do nothing. The second one is the do everything, which shows there are still a lot of problems, even if we build this $44 billion plan in 2040. So we have to be careful. It's not that we can't build it. We can't build it entirely with the currently projected 70% funds. We can build it all. We just have to get more money. And I'm not saying give me more 70% funds, but there are other funds. I mean, we have state funds. We have been promised a $1 trillion federal infrastructure investment plan. There's private funds. Proffers will come back someday. I'm sure my friends to the left here agree with me on that. I think we need to be careful about saying it's impossible to build this. It's not impossible. It's just not affordable using the current projected 70% funds. And there is a difference there.
Mr. Chairman, but the delta between what we can do with current funds and what we could do if we had all that money we were talking about, if we actually did it, is a fairly significant delta. And I think that's why verbiage has to be placed here.
I think you also have to remember that it includes Virginia paying for all of a new tunnel under the river.
And your bridge,
and the long bridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think putting the bubbles is a great idea. I think, but I think, you know, Northern Virginia got 46% of the smart scale money this last round. You know that we, so it's like another year's worth of MBTA money. So I just think we're going to keep competing. Our stuff, we're congested. We're going to compete well. And so it's not just about these monies. Mm-hmm. You know, and look at how much money has been brought up to 395 from both the feds and the deal and 66. Who could have anticipated that, you know, a year and a half ago?
So, I have no objection. I mean, I think we're sort of in a violent agreement here that there's value to adding more information. Well, staff should maybe give some thought to how we frame it. Because, yes, we don't want to create too rosy a picture, but don't we want to create too pessimistic a picture either? And frankly, we don't want to set the expectation with the public that we expect to be able to do everything. I don't think we want to set an expectation with our other funding sources that we're letting them off the hook by saying we can't do everything.
Of course, the more text we add, the denser this gets.
and the reality is, I think to Jay's point, yes, it's a very dense document. This is the softened version of it. I mean, there are slides that staff brought me 2 weeks ago that I said, oh, no, you can't put that one.
Yeah.
You know, I geeked out on them. I thought they were awesome. But I was like, yeah, this is undigestible. But I don't know how you make – trying to make it more digestible, it starts becoming incomplete. very shortly thereafter. Yeah. It's a big document. I mean, remember, I looked at Dave Snyder. How thick was Transaction 2020? Probably, I think it was about that thick. Transaction 2040 is in like the biggest binder that Staples sells. If we, I don't think we're going to put this in binders, but if we did, it would be more than one binder, the final product. So, Dave, you
sure. Just really a couple questions. Going back to 6 and 7, the baseline color orange, I don't want to get into micromanaging, but it looks really bad. It's like it creates the impression that it's all terrible and there's terrible that's more terrible than terrible. And it just doesn't create the kind of impression that I think we want to provide. But that's a small comment. Really toward the back, I'm wondering if we can link to and say to the public that we've already received a lot of public input and link to that. We've had slides that summarize some of that public input about, for example, how are people and money spent in the future. So can we link to that somewhere in the back under the how to submit comments? Link to the information that people have already submitted. I think they may want to see that. You see where I'm going with that? I don't think that changes too much. And then when we're talking about population and employment growth, there's no reference to regional activity centers. So I don't know if we want to add that at all. And then finally, in the project list, it doesn't include proposed costs. Is there a reason for that? So those are the questions.
Let's see if I can take them in order. Changing the base color of the maps, I think would be a problem.
You can do that, right? I mean, it's really up to the professionals, but I sort of lose. I mean, I get is not particularly good, but that's.
Red.
Well, you're just speaking about the orange that covers the area where there's just not much happening.
Yeah.
Right. So you're not wanting us to change all the colors. You're just trying to change this one color.
So Star Wars fans in the room, you can see my notes here. The one on the left looks like the planet Mustafar, which is where Anakin Skywalker fell into the lava in his fight with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the one on the right looks like Endor, which is the planet where the Ewoks live.
And orange is the color of prison uniforms, which is not
The orange in the middle is tattooed.
Is what?
Tattooed.
Oh, nice. I'll put that on here. There you go. He said the one in the middle is tattooed. That's the planet that's the planet that Luke Skywalker's from.
Oh my god. It's like Geek City up here right now.
That's just Rand Skywalker.
Mr. Schneider, your second question, adding something to the public comment page about comments we've already received.
We can
link to
some nice summary.
We can add something small. I don't know that we have a lot of room to summarize all of that stuff, but we can add link to information.
Just link to that.
And then costs. At one point we had actually made the decision to not describe activity centers because it was complicated and took a lot of real estate. And this is such a dense document already. They do show up on the map on page 5. So perhaps we should at least have them. Oh, they're on the legend there. The issue is that describing what a regional activity center is takes up a lot of paid real estate. particularly on page 5 is in short supply.
It's called something different in every district.
Yeah. And then the final question was, what can we include cost information?
Is there a reason why we didn't in the list of projects?
I can tell you that one. I know that one. Because, A, it's an unconstrained plan. But more importantly, because, frankly, the cost estimates that we have are almost meaningless at this point. And, frankly, I'll say that it had to come up. I don't think it came up. But what I would have said when it came up was, if you put numbers in here, you create an expectation that those numbers are real. And then when we get to the six-year plan and it turns out that the project costs twice as much as what it said, your cost-benefit analysis gets completely thrown off.
I understand that. Yeah. On the other hand, it would be helpful for the public to know what these proposed costs are. I mean, if I were looking at this, I have no, absolutely no economic background. Unless the map, does the map go to
The transaction map doesn't have the cost populated. The mapping up the 358 projects doesn't have the cost populated in those in that map.
Does or does not?
Does not.
Well, I'm just throwing it out. I mean, if I'm a member of the public, I have no idea what the comparative cost of all this is. How am I going to really comment on it?
But I realize
that the costs are very preliminary, and I realize exactly the points that you're making.
So let me suggest something that we can work on. Because what I don't want to do, because obviously if we even want to do that, it would take some time. What might be valuable is, I mean, we put this out there with Kevin's staff a lot of feedback on changes to consider making. I think when the time comes, we'll have a motion to publicize this that includes direction to staff to incorporate changes as appropriate based on this discussion. And I think rather than trying to make that part of the advertisement, as we get toward adoption, we can get some more analysis about what the feasibility and reliability of that is. So that when, because this document then becomes the document also for 5 more years, and those numbers do become very relevant in the context of turning this plan into a funding program, or turning pieces of it into a funding program. So that number, those numbers do have to be out there. But let's look at that for inclusion in the final document.
And Mr. Chairman, remember that there are public hearings, town halls, where local staffs will be available to answer specific questions or give ballpark estimates regarding, certain projects and or whatnot. Or people can submit questions to get more information.
Absolutely. Because one of the issues is, because this is a 25-year plan, some of the estimates, some of the projects submitted said, look, we're going to ask, when we get to the call for project, we need money in FY18. Other project sponsors said, well, we don't need money until the way out year, so this is how much we think the project is going to cost, but we haven't done the detailed engineering and design work.
If you're ready for a motion. So I would move approval of the release of the transaction plan draft and associated project list for public comment and to incorporate changes as appropriate, given also the discussion we've had and the short turnaround that we have before public hearings and public outreach begins.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay. Everyone understand the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
So the motion carries with one dissension. Delegate, you go ahead and go. All those were yes. Okay, let's go. So let's go back to the minutes. Are we done on this one? All right. The rest of this goes really fast. All right. We have item 3, the minutes from the May 11th meeting. Those were sent out in advance. Any questions, comments? The motion for approval.
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Randall. Seconded by Ms. Villava. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Mr. Chairman.
Extension from Mr. Cole. Extension from Mr. Lush.
That was
Mr. Hugo. Okay. Now jump back forward to item 6, the debt policy, and I can't go to Mr. Parrish on this, so we're going to let Mr. Lovejoy do it, take this one, or are we going to go to Mr.
I got it. No, I'm joking.
The amendment to policy 9 is a revision of the working capital reserve, and finance committee is recommending a cap of $120 million on that reserve, and Mr. Longy can brief us on the policy changes.
Very brief, to be respectful of time, this change has been vetted by bond counsel, financial advisor, council of counsel. We communicated it to the rating agencies. They said it would have no negative impact on our rating.
to really give you a very short summary. If we don't put this cap in place, or if the authority doesn't put the cap in place, it will be working capital reserve will grow to $138 million over the 6-year plan. So putting the cap in place will have no negative rating features, no negative credit features, and we'll add $18 million to the 6-year plan's pay go balance.
Is that a motion, Ms. Fischel? That's a motion
so
to approve?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fassett. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment of policy number 17.
Okay. The next policy change is needed because the authority has adopted an equipment replacement reserve for the purpose of capital asset replacement. Mr. Long, you can give us more detail.
Another quick recap. This policy change is needed because the authority adopted a equipment replacement reserve in the operating fund. And so our auditors are going to look for guidance from the authority on how to use it. Briefly, what it does is that since all of our capital assets basically got put into use at the same time, they will wear out at the same time. And this keeps us from having a bubble in the need in the operating budget. There is one important staff note in this, that the Northern Virginia Regional Commission has allowed the NVTA staff to use and share the GIS plotter. As you can see from the earlier demonstrations, we expect to put a lot of wear and tear on that plotter. So in order to be fair to the commission, we would include capitalizing that plotter in future operating budgets. And the fact that we can share a plotter actually brings significant cost, operating cost savings to the authority.
Motion, Ms.
Ritter?
So moved.
Second.
Second by Mr. Bulova. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Policy 28, Ms. Hines.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. This has been before you before. We had a robust conversation about this particular policy, which I'll remind everybody is mostly being drafted to make sure our staff has protection in busy campaign seasons from requests taking over their lives. And we made a number of changes, which are highlighted, and I'm going to walk through them, Mr. Longer, please.
Certainly. The changes specifically requested for the January meeting were a definition of political candidate. There was a recommendation to make greater use of email and to use the authority's website for the dissemination of information. Additionally, as not discussed in January, was an additional language which clarifies that authority members' legal questions of the council are exempt from the policy to preserve the attorney-client relationship.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Motion by Ms. Hines, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Bullen. Let me make sure I clarify something. I think that we discussed this at the Governance Personnel Committee meeting. Questions, the fact that members of the authority, when the members of the authority are themselves candidates, questions that are asked in the context of doing business as a member of the authority are not covered by, we're not publishing the discussion of this meeting, for example, or the occasional phone call to Monica. So, excellent. Any further discussion?
I just want to make sure I understand deep. So if a candidate, whomever that candidate might be, asks a question of the authority, the answer goes on the authority's website. There is no effort made to call the candidate's opponents to make sure that they know that the answer's on the website, correct? It's just the answer just goes on the website.
Yes, and all candidates would be told answers to questions to be posted on the website, and then it's up to them.
To go find out
what's
there, what's not there, maybe one, if their opponent asks a question, then there it is. Okay, all right.
Do you hear the questions or discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Well, you have them.
We bring to you this revised handbook. There were a number of what I would characterize as predominantly housekeeping. The agency has matured. We have different arrangements about any number of things. And we have this, the committee went through this handbook pretty carefully. We feel that we've brought it up to the standard that it needs to be to reflect today's business. So, would recommend your approval, Mr. Chairman.
Any
I don't think Mike needs to walk through all this.
Motion from Ms. Hines. We have a second.
Second.
Second by Ms. Randall. Any discussion? Questions? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Next item, the approval to enter into program management agreement with the Virginia Department of Transportation. Who's that?
Mr. Chairman, in short, the Virginia Department of Transportation has requested that the MBTAs, that we enter into a program management agreement for the purposes of the federal grant application that's entitled Northern Virginia Regional Mobility Initiative. And this is really part of the integrated corridor management system. There is a 50% requirement for a contribution, if you will, for matching for the grant, but no monies are being asked of the authority. If the grant is awarded, then we will have a project management agreement and an MOU that we will execute per the review with the attorneys. And I did send a draft project management agreement to the council for review.
Any questions? Do we have a motion to fit?
I move approval to enter into the program management agreement.
Motion from Mr. Snyder, second from Ms. Hines. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Finally, approval of call for projects for the 66 outside the Beltway concessionaire payments.
So, Mr. Chairman, at your May 11th meeting, I informed the authority that the Secretary's office was looking for coordination from MBTA regarding programming the $500 million concessionaire payment that is expected to be received from Express Mobility Partners when the Commonwealth reaches financial close, which is anticipated for next month, for the I-66 outside the Beltway project. At that time at your meeting last month, we did inform the authority that we would be working with staff regarding some high-level criteria for project eligibility. And that criteria is listed on item number 4, if you will, in the memo, including projects that are in your current long-range plan, which is Transaction 2040, projects that are in V-Trans 2040, I-66 corridor statewide significance, comprehensive plan, CIPs, projects that are in the COGS constrained long-range transportation plan. It's a comprehensive list, or projects that have a letter of support from your governing body. Now, I do want to note there are additional criteria, and some are specified in the code governing concessionaire payments, one being that a project must be in the I-66 corridor or demonstrate a clear and compelling nexus to the users of the corridor. Projects must benefit the users of the corridor. One thing we are recommending that there are no studies to be funded with these funds. And also that projects must demonstrate the ability to utilize the requested funding by toll day one. Now, I would also like to draw your attention to item 5, timing. Admittedly, this is a very quick turnaround. So if you issue the call for projects this evening, June 8th, the project's responses to the call will be due June 28th by midnight. At your July 13th meeting, we would ask the authority to approve the recommendations to advance to the Commonwealth Transportation Board, which is legally the body that has the final say on approval for such projects. The reason being is it is anticipated that the CTB will take action on a project list either August or September of this year. So it is extremely fast. We do understand that. I've had communications through the RJAG in a conference call with staff regarding some of the criteria. It's our intent to come to the members of this body regarding an evaluation process and how we will evaluate projects, but that will be discussed in further detail in working with staff. But I do want to note one thing that is critical. The authority does not have final autonomy on this $500 million that does lie with the CTB. But given that the $500 million can only be used in Northern Virginia, this body should have a voice in making a recommendation.
I think it's important to understand the evaluation that we will get far more than $500 million worth of proposed projects. Indeed, I think it's possible that we already have more than $500 million worth of proposed projects that have been recommended by some jurisdictions. This is going to be a less robust process than the HB 599 process is, because we neither have the staffing resources nor time to go through anything like that. Is that
That is correct. I mean, with staff working on transaction, we just don't get, and to meet the CTB's deadline or the secretary's deadline for the Commonwealth, we don't have the additional time to do that level of evaluation.
So will there be any criteria or evaluation to determine if a project qualifies for clear and compelling nexus to the 66 board?
Some of the criteria that we're vetting right now is, number one, the project has to show, and this isn't in any priority order, but the project has to show that its ability to reduce congestion. The project is an extension or expansion of a project that's currently encompassed in the transformed I-66 outside the Beltway project. The project has actually undergone some performance evaluation-based level of assessment. So under Transaction 2040 or the SMART scale process, because these processes are performance-based evaluations, and project that's a joint effort with two or more localities. So these are some of the criteria that we're currently trying to iron out.
So let me add, that's a conversation with the Deputy Secretary about this. And again, they, part of the reason that we don't have, that Monica doesn't have tight language on this is because we haven't gotten clear guidance from the Secretary's office about what their evaluation will be based on. And that we have to keep this a little loose and let it get tightened as the process moves forward. I can tell you that this clear and compelling nexus to the project, it's been made very clear to us that that is going to be important to them, because they believe that's going to be very important to the Federal Highway Administration. And these are my words and no one else's. Projects that help the 66 outside the belt, transform 66 outside the Beltway, function better, clearly have a clear and compelling nexus. And then where it goes downward from there is what is less clear and what is less compelling probably remains to be seen. But they are very much interested in projects that become part of the Transform 66 network, if you will, because that's what they can sell well. And I think, and again, my words, no one else's, I think what Nick Donahue implied to me, my takeaway from it was, they would very much like for us to recommend projects that can then just be turned into the Secretary's recommendation to the CTB. They reserve the right to say, we don't like your recommendations. The Secretary's going to recommend something else. And, of course, the CTB has the ability to say, yeah, we don't even like that. We're going to change it again. But so there's going to have to be a lot of coordination with the Secretary's office on all of it.
So we might be making recommendations on projects that we're saying right here we don't have the staff or the time to properly evaluate?
Not to evaluate to the degree we would evaluate our own section plan.
But so the call for projects is to our jurisdictions.
Yes.
And agencies. And so the projects that would be nominated would have been through in jurisdictions, I guess, a vetting process. So,
yeah.
And I guess the important thing is that, that when we put out a call for projects, we make sure that jurisdictions and agencies know, what the criteria is that we know of, and that is especially that it's, beneficial to to the I-66 corridor. And we've been asked to do this.
And I assume that we're going out to the individual jurisdictions on their own from EDOT. They're not just going to us asking for these.
Well,
going to you and council and everybody else, I would assume, on their own. So.
I think they're asking us, and what we would do is to.
I think that
they will also be going to.
The secretary's asked us to request the input to be the conduit. And I think to some degree, I think it's an attempt, going back to when we adopted our FY17 program, we committed $300 million, $100 million in PAYGO, $200 million in debt service that was good to the project. And the condition on that was that we would be a partner in the project and have say over certain pieces of it. When the need for the $300 million went away, I think the secretary's view is their commitment to keep us as a partner in it did not. It's just that our role is very different than would have been envisioned at that time, and bluntly, I think less well-defined, because back then, we weren't anticipating that there'd be this cash that comes into the mix. The way we were looking at is more money that would come from future toll concessions in sometimes in 20-plus years, possibly. So it became much more urgent. And again, this is my characterization and not theirs, recognizing that there's an election this year. This administration is trying to wrap up a lot of stuff. So to some degree, I think what we're also doing is we're doing some of the lift for the secretary's office just in terms of the organization piece and collecting the suggestions. And I think the other value for what this call does is, you know, I think from a legal perspective, the secretary's office could have just picked some projects and then put them in front of the CTB. I think this is the vehicle that allows every project to at least get its hearing. That the project that someone else, that the CTB staff might never have thought of, at least has its chance to put the case out.
Thank you, Chairman. I assume this $500 million is the product of negotiation between the Commonwealth and Express Mobility Partners. So $500 million is coming to the Commonwealth, and I don't think that has an earmark on it. Probably just is part of the deal for the Express Mobility Partners. And it sounds like that the CDB has said, well, this is money that is related to 66 that came from Express Mobility Partners, therefore we're calling it for projects. Like, so my question is, could not this money kind of come back into the NVTA for allocation as a part of our 70% projects?
It cannot, because the federal code says that the CTB must allocate the money. It's the CTB's money, and I suspect that the CTB doesn't have the authority to say, "Hey, NVTA, here's the, you know, now that we've gotten it, we're going to give it to you." They have to allocate. Federal Highways has to sign off, and Federal Highways wants to sign off on it by the end of this calendar year. Federal Highway wants this piece of the project essentially closed before or in conjunction with their signing off on the overall project.
So the FHA can tell the Commonwealth how to spend this $500 million.
No. Not how to spend it.
State code.
It's the state code.
The General Assembly told them that.
So it's on you.
I have to read that code.
The state code says it's definitely you. But Federal Highway has the Federal Highway still has to sign off on the final project, on the whole $2 billion project.
And it being spent in the corridor, I believe, is a part of the Federal Highway regulations, because this is, after all, the Federal Highway that we are expanding. So I think there is an interaction with the federal law as well as the state.
They have final veto, if you will, on the overall project, and they've communicated to the Commonwealth that they see the allocation of this $500 million, not just the receipt of it, but the allocation of it, as part of the overall project on which they must sign off. And that's really where the time critical, that coupled with the fact that the administration is going to come to an end, are driving the time critical.
Interesting. So this $500 million is considered to be part of the project, even though really it's a concessionaire's payment from the person who won the contract.
Right. But it's a concessionaire's payment that is only available because of anticipated future revenues from the toll. Mobility Partners isn't taking this out of their reserve funds. They're borrowing this money as revenue bonds.
They're
borrowing from the feds?
Yeah, through CHIPI.
Yeah.
Marty? Yeah. Just a couple of quick ones. So just to clarify the eligibility, pretty much these are the eligibility criteria. Having done some of this through MBTC before, is this money, this $500 million, considered to be restricted the same as toll money would be?
Yeah, I believe so. Similar, I think
very
we're
similar.
It's
similar.
Close.
I know
they're
when we went through that with the inside, I-66 inside the Beltway, everything that was allocated had to benefit the toll payer.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And I don't really see that word here right now. I'm assuming it's pretty similar.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was a term I kept hearing before. Because what that meant was, you know, a lot of people thought that it was generated inside the Beltway on I-66. You could only spend it there. And this meant something very different, because the toll payers were coming from Loudoun or Prince William or other places, and it expanded the range of places that could generate a project because whatever they were doing, transit or otherwise, it was benefiting the toll payer.
And there's a stark difference because the code regarding concessionaire payments says it has to benefit the users of the corridor.
Okay.
So
in this case, there's probably not that much difference
right.
between a user and a toll payer.
Toll payer.
All right. But the point being that you don't have to be physically, the project is not... The project does not have to be physically on the roadbed of I-66 outside
correct.
Of Beltway.
Yes.
It could. It just has to benefit the
yes.
users of that corridor.
Yes.
Okay, and that's important because that was something we dealt with a lot in the last one. The other was the question about rolling stock. This is all for capital.
Yes,
correct?
I have been informed that they would like to see capital only, no operations.
Okay, so that means that is there a difference between VRE rolling stock and Metro rolling stock?
Capital, I would say that they're both capital investments or capital purchases, if you will.
Both conceivably eligible.
If they can demonstrate the criteria, that they meet the criteria, I would say so.
I'm just talking about eligibility.
Oh, yeah.
Eligibility, because
yeah.
we don't have the criteria yet, right?
Yes.
It is. I would just caution that so Metro exercised all the options it had for the 7000 series, and they've now moved into designing a new series, a new car. That's what happens. And there isn't going to be that design is going to take a number of years. So I think that because this has to, my understanding is the administration wants as much of this money spent by the time toll day one comes so that people have advantage of these things. I just don't think that we're going to be ordering new Metro cars, I guess
right.
is my point.
So, okay.
Whereas
so
VRE
to clarify,
is in a more flexible situation.
I think this needs to be fleshed out a little bit because eligibility may be, it may be eligible on paper to meet because it's capital, because it's rolling stock, but if it doesn't meet the other criteria, which is demonstrate the ability to start utilizing, that seems like an important one, and every project that submits needs to be able to answer that question.
Absolutely.
Right? That's kind of what you're getting at. Mary,
they don't want the funds.
I mean, this is not like we're going to 10 years from now,
yeah.
we'll spend this money. The whole point of the concessionaire payment, in, as I understand it, is to be able to address impacts and improve the function of the corridor with this money in advance of the tolls actually coming in. With some of that talk with MBTC
right.
when the...
It's not like it's 6 months, but it's still a timeline.
Yeah, I think 2022.
2022.
This,
about 5 years.
Yeah, so, you know, you can't do something that where you know, you haven't done NEPA or you... I mean, these things have to be somewhat ready to...
Well, I mean, you guys pulled this together fast, but that ain't going to be nothing compared to what you're going to be asked to do on this expedited call for projects.
So when is the estimate for day one, the calendar estimate?
2022.
Sometime
2022.
So do you need a motion, Mark?
Yes,
please. Is it okay for me to make that motion?
Yeah,
that's
actually very fitting.
Okay, I would move that the authority approve a call for projects to initiate project selection, which will lead to authority recommendations for the CTB for project funding to the I-66 outside the Beltway concession.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not able to support this for a couple of reasons. One, I don't fully understand the rush. And second, I don't fully understand the implicit, implied, legally required earmarks on this $500 million. I understand that the FAA is saying we have to spend it on something related to the ICC corridor, but it seems like we're rushing it. And if I could get documents that would show the restrictions on where this $500 million concessionaire payment flowing into the Commonwealth has to be spent. What are the limitations on that? I might get more comfortable. But I was thinking, if the town of Percival wanted to file a project,
you can file it.
Good luck trying to show how it affects the IC6 corridor, though.
that would probably be an evaluation. That would be captured in the evaluation criteria, presumably.
But it seems like we're maybe there's a need for a rush, but nevertheless, it seems to be a bit of a rush.
I understand. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Call a question. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Right. Thank you very much. The no's came from Delegate Hudo, Delegate Nichol. Okay. Those are all of our action items. Does Rachel, does finance have anything else for us tonight?
Okay, just a couple of things. The highlights are the committee has begun work on funding the six-year program. That will continue into the fall. Finance committee has also received the first investment portfolio reports. Fitch has reaffirmed the authority credit rating as AA+ with a stable outlook. And the finance committee meeting will not meet June 15th. It has been canceled. The next meeting is July 20th. And Mr. Longy, can you give us details on anything?
Certainly, if there, most of the information is in the staff.
Besides, anything else from government
perspective? Only that our committee won't meet until September, and we would welcome people to that first discussion of the potential legislative issues.
I have nothing extra from the Planning and Programming Committee. Ms. Backman, do we need anything from PCAC or Technical Advisory Committee?
They're in the packet, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And do you have anything else for us?
I do. Regarding my executive director's report at your May 11th meeting, you did ask me to contact the commissioner regarding the I-66 truck discussion. I did. The correspondence is in my packet, or as part of my report, I should note. Also, I would like to introduce to you Sarah Camille Hibb. She, could you stand, Sarah? Sarah is the Authority's Communication and Public Affairs Manager. So thank you for joining us tonight, Sarah. And we also have an intern, Melissa Rossi. Rossi, thank you. And she's a student at GMU.
Any other business? I have nothing else. Any other business to come before the authority this evening? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.